The stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Don't worry, Justin Marcus. I am going to make you a playlist of the openers because you are just all about them. Every time I start playing one of these things, these guys are just ready to go. Sweet Child of Mine doesn't fit in anywhere with how we're about to do this, but it still is a great song no matter what, so I'm okay with it. I got no problem with it, guys. It's an amazing song. I want to bring in, as always, you know what? Usually they're the Stat Man and Sergeant Salty, but for this podcast, because it works out perfectly, they're going to be known as the same thing. They're the birthday boys. Russ just had his birthday. Justin's birthday is tomorrow. They are the birthday boys this week. And I'll say it to Russ first, because this has already happened. Happy birthday to our stat man, Russ Ivanek.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to... Well, at least I'm not as old as you. I'm feeling okay.
Oh, well, I mean... For the next month, you are as old as me, and then we'll remedy that. Sergeant Salty hasn't had his birthday yet, but if you looked at him, you'd never guess he's a day over 45 with that hairline.
Hey, you shut your goddamn mouth.
30 going on 507.
How we doing today, boys?
Yeah, doing all right. Yeah. You want to talk Sweet Child of Mine? Lucas Raymond's a Red Wing, so Sweet Child of Mine. I'm okay with that.
Which, before we get too far off topic, I do want to ask you guys. No one really answered. I just got a laugh out of it. Was I right that Key and Peele skit, adding in the names, it worked? It just really did. Especially him blowing off DeKaiser. I was very good with that. But
and Nielsen and Biega at the end. Just kind of like, what's going on? Looking at him, walking by.
I can't... Yeah, Go ahead, Jay.
If Alex Biega is on our roster by the end of the year, I'm going to be very mad. Like, there's a reason why he was at the end of that skit. Like, no. Go out the door, please. Go play with sticks outside. Go away. But it's a perfect. Is that a meme? Is that a gif? Is that a live-action meme? I don't know what I'm talking about here.
I don't know what it is. But I have to ask, because I can't pronounce the guy's name. When he actually gets to Keegan-Michael Key, and he can't decide if he wants to high-five or what he's supposed to do, and then he finds out, and he goes, afternoon, my Octoroon, and it's like, is that how it is with this player, that we're not too sure if we're going to embrace him or not? I believe it's Kozlov's nephew, isn't it?
Oh, Nemestikov?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it works, too, because he's actually, he grew up in Detroit. Because he came over when he was young and lived with Slava and his family, or at least not far from him. So, yeah, it kind of works. It's like, we were kids at the same time.
it was just great. It was perfectly put. And as he's embracing every one of these people, I'm like, yes, that's someone we want. That's someone we want. Yeah, I like that. That's good. And we're going to get back to to that whole thing of Slava and all that, because we have a little numbers conversation for later in the show, and I want to get these guys' opinion on a couple different things, because to me it feels like we value the jersey numbers more than the players probably value the jersey numbers. They mean more to us because of what is attached. So we're going to touch on that a little bit, but before we do that, a lot happening in the NFL. Nothing of it had anything to do with the Detroit Lions, which is amazing. I don't think we would be doing this show a service if we didn't touch on the biggest story of the week, and that is the fact that I feel bad for Dak Prescott. This guy was actually having a year, and he was having a get-his-money year, is the thing. He was putting up the numbers that would have justified him getting that big contract that he was owed. Not looking like that now, obviously. I don't know if you guys haven't seen it. A horrible, horrible leg injury. Russ, I was with you when I saw the worst I've ever seen, and that was Lattimore's knee against Tennessee. Might be the most gruesome injury I've ever seen. And then second to that is Gordon Hayward breaking his ankle, like week one of the NBA 2 years ago. So very tough to see. But, Jay, you're the shrewd businessman here. You're the commissioner. You're the everything. I want to ask you, if you're Dallas, is this an opportunity to show a sign of good faith? maybe not give Dak the max, but give Dak the money you know he's deserved, and show a little bit of a, we're going to stand behind our player and not treat them like interchangeable chess pieces?
I mean, if the question is if I'm doing it, yeah. I have you guys change my name in your phone, in your contact, and I handed out $5 to anyone who did it. Like, I'm a man of my word when it comes to that. What Jerry Jones is going to do is what is good for business. And if you told him to write down a number prior to this weekend, that number just got probably cut into a third, because that number is not going to be the full of what he deserves everything. He's not getting that now. These are business pieces. He's going to say that's the inherent risk of being a quarterback. I'm so sorry for your loss, but we're moving on with this stash of money. So I would do it. Jerry Jones, it's not a good year to be 60 years old and white, okay? So this isn't going to work out. He is going to do the wrong move, I can guarantee that.
Any year, Jerry Jones is going to make the wrong move. But you're absolutely right. I guess I'll put it this way. In physics, leverage, right? You get a point and you apply force to either side. Similar to how both sides of his leg got some kind of a significant force. In NFL contracts, this is also leverage here. And Jerry Jones is 100% going to use it. I would venture to say most NFL owners or GMs or anyone would use this kind of injury as leverage. I mean, we saw something similar with Alex Smith, right? He got hurt. Just coming back, like we've seen it time and time again. The NFL, by nature, is just a war of attrition. And if you look like you're going to get hurt, which everyone does, and it's actually contract year, yeah, that's going to take money out of your pocket. And it sucks. And if it was going to be any other way, the deal would have already been done. It would have been done in the offseason. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have been playing on the franchise tag. So it sucks. But that's the state of it. Dak's going to get a pay cut now.
You lost me when you said in physics. So
in physics, you just turned my mic off.
Just been smiling and nodding the whole time. Look, is it? See, that's the problem. It, from the business aspect, yes, the number immediately. I don't know about half, Jay, but the number immediately took a pay cut. The second they saw that leg, they immediately, in poor taste, probably can look at each other and be like, okay, well, there's $30 million we just saved, which is terrible to think about because that's a human being. And you mentioned Alex Smith. I was right there with you. Obviously, Alex Smith's injury was something completely different. They didn't know if he was ever going to have the leg again. But, you know, with Dak, they immediately said, we may not see this guy ever again on the football field. That was with Teddy Bridgewater years ago with Minnesota when he hurt his knee. So it is that thing, but you got to think Dak will find a way to get back to what level. It just stinks because if this happens 12 months from now, he's probably sitting with $50 or $60 million guaranteed in his bank account to become, not that he can't already retire and live the rest of his life very comfortably if he wants to, but that $50 million makes a world of difference. So it is tough to see. You would hope that the Cowboys make the right decision, but as you both said, we're talking about Jerry Jones, so it's very possible he could make the wrong decision altogether. I mean, let's be honest. He brought in Andy Dalton to be his backup quarterback. So,
and his starting quarterback, Andy Dalton, now, thank you.
Actually, I saw a very funny meme the other day. Someone put, Jerry Jones makes big signing at quarterback, and it was a picture of Uncle Rico sitting right next to him. So I liked that. Go ahead, Jay.
I saw one article to close out this topic this week. That, don't worry, Cowboys fans, Andy Dalton is here to steady the ship. And I'm like, is this The Onion? Like, did Deadspin do this? Like, this can't be a real article. Andy Dalton couldn't steady a duck, like a toy duck down a lazy river. This is not going to be good for the Cowboys.
Yeah, but he's a TCU product, so he's automatically a Texas prodigy, the way they view it. Their quarterbacks never go bad. That's the reason that Colt McCoy stayed in the league for years and never actually played, but everybody thought, oh, Colt McCoy's in. We've got a chance. No, you don't. He was just on a really good Texas team. So, yeah, you want to hope the Dallas does the right thing, but let's be honest, we probably won't see it. Before we get to the Lions, we can actually talk about someone who got their money, went to a horrible situation. Cough, cough. He was coached by Adam Gase, so therefore he had no chance. Le'Veon Bell released today from the New York Jets. Jay, I know how tough this is for you. It's a Spartan running back. You're a fan. I want to ask you both, taking the Lions out of the equation, because if either of you say the Lions, we have to have a bigger conversation. Is there a position or a spot you think is best suited for him? Because I've, and this is going to sound weird, so let me get it out of the way and we can rebuttal afterwards. I've heard talks that the number one contender right now is Cleveland.
What?
There you go.
Yeah.
Jay's nodding hard on that one. So, you know what, Jay, stew on that for a minute. Russ, I've heard the number one contender is Cleveland. Where do you see Le'Veon Bell fitting best?
I mean, I guess he's an Ohio kid, so maybe there's some ties to Cleveland, but, like, that's already a stacked backfield. But I've got three, the first of which is the team that's formerly known as the Portsmouth Spartans. That's a joke. I don't want them coming to the Lions. The Bears, the Bills, the Titans are the three spots that I really see. Bears, I really hope he doesn't because, hey, it's in the division, but they already lost Tariq Cohen to an ACL. And they have not been good running the ball to begin with. Bills, again, not very good at running the ball right now. Third worst yards per carry in the league. Playoff team, right? This is what we're looking for Bell. Playoff team that'll not enact the diva protocol for him, and a team that needs running help. Which also brings us to the Titans. Good running game, mostly. Playoff caliber team, mostly. Darrington Evans is the backup running back right now, who has three carries for 9 yards so far. Derrick Henry has 82 rushes through three games. He only trails one player, Josh Jacobs, with 83 carries, who's played another game. If he goes down, the Titans are in trouble. They need to spell him to make him last the rest of the season and have some kind of an insurance policy, because Ryan Tannehill is not bringing to the promised land without literal Goliath Derrick Henry dragging them there.
Okay. I like all three of those. The only one, and it is just for the reason you gave the example of, I don't see why you'd bring another big back in, because that's just less carries you're going to give to the freight train that is Derrick Henry. But I get at the same time, you need him healthy. I totally understand
keep
that.
Him fresh.
It's just, it sounds so foreign to think about, but at the same time, I see exactly what you're saying. Jay, over to you. Where do you see a landing spot for Le'Veon?
I see the need with Tennessee. I just don't see him going anywhere south of Kentucky. Like, I see him, like, he played, obviously from Ohio, played for Michigan State, so Michigan, scooted on over to Pittsburgh, and then scooted on over to New York. He's staying
north. But that wasn't his choice. He was drafted to Pittsburgh. He didn't pick to go to Pittsburgh.
I'm not arguing that point, but I'm okay. Just saying, still, my point is valid. He's been staying north, right? I see two spots for him. I see Cleveland, because it's home, and he knows he's a running back. He knows his shelf life is short. So pretty soon, why not already, like, you know, like LeBron in L.A.? LeBron will probably end up being in L.A. till he dies. I can see Le'Veon trying to get close to home. I'm not saying that Le'Veon's going to die anytime soon, but you never know, so get home, buddy. The other part is back to Pittsburgh. They have James Conner, and they have Benny Snell. I think it's Benny. Is it Denny or Benny?
Benny with a B.
See, we're always doing fact checks.
It's
here.
Jenny from the block.
All right,
you still have Jennifer Lopez. Benny and the Jets. Oh, he used to be with the Jets.
I used to have a little. Now he's got a lot. Okay,
there you go.
The point remains that he's very familiar with that system. Pittsburgh would welcome him back. Antonio Brown is gone. Obviously, Bell is the lesser of two headaches with those two people. I just feel like his window is short. And between Pittsburgh and Cleveland, one of those two rosters, I think he'll land on. The Tampa Bay stuff I've been reading, that's garbage. This isn't super team from the South. I'm done with the Tampa Bay stuff. I'm with him. So.
All right.
That's what I got.
Jay, I have to ask.
Yes, sir.
Did you just watch ESPN this morning? That was literally verbatim what they all predicted.
No.
Listen, Nick Chubb out with for several weeks unknown MCL sprain, so it makes sense. It really does make sense. I agree. I actually don't see it, though. I see two teams, and I think neither are really in the playoff hunt, but I think adding Le'Veon to the mix immediately puts them in a conversation for playoff hunt. First one is from Russ's game of the week last week. I see him for the Chargers. You don't have Eckler for a couple weeks. Might as well get Le'Veon in there. That's an experienced back to give Herbert a breather. You still have an amazing receiving core. So that's just extra pressure off Herbert to be able to know at any point he can hand it off to Le'Veon, and Le'Veon can go get what they need him to get. So I like him there. And plus, Le'Veon's pretty good out of the backfield in the passing game. So there. My number one pick, and this might just be because since we, probably for the last 6 months, I've been preaching, you need to get someone on this team to help this guy or you're going to have a bad season. Well, you just fired your head coach in Bill O'Brien. This guy needs to go to Houston to play with Deshaun Watson. Give Deshaun Watson an extra body in that backfield that completely makes this compatible. Deshaun can scramble and go. Like I said, Le'Veon great out of the backfield, but gives him a solid running game.
I like that.
Deshaun Watson, David Johnson, Duke Johnson, Le'Veon Bell. They just line them up four wide in the back. Where are we running?
Yeah. Can you honestly tell me any of those guys you just named outside of Deshaun Watson is anywhere as good as Le'Veon Bell when Le'Veon Bell's running?
Probably not.
It's just
they didn't just suck all the good out of Le'Veon Bell.
They're not going to go get a wide receiver. They've made that clear, because if they were, they would have gone and got a receiver at some point. Might as well give him a legitimate threat in the backfield that you have to pay attention to, because then guess what? These second-tier receivers become open because you have to bite on that play action every time. Because if Le'Veon Bell, listen, as much crap as I give, you know, Jay and all that for like Spartans, and Le'Veon was a Spartan, Le'Veon Bell is an elite running back when he's playing effectively. So if you have him in that system, you now have a quarterback that can break it at any point. You have a quarterback who is capable of throwing it anywhere on the field, and now you add a runner who is just as deadly out of the backfield and can also catch the ball. So you still have to stick with him. Not to mention he's a truck, so he's going to have all he's going to give Watson all day to pass in the blocking, Jay.
My only concern, no matter what team he jumps on, I don't know if he's going to be Bell of 2017 or 18, whatever it was, when he almost rushed for 2K. He's off the field stuff. He's not a good rapper. And I know he tried to have this whole rap career. He auto-tuned and just wrote down five words in a sentence and tried to be a rapper. I can do that, okay? He was not a good rapper. I'm concerned with the fact that yet we can work on this. Lil J, I don't like that. he hasn't been on the field to show me what he can do. He held out for a year. He barely played for the Jets. He collected 20-some-odd million dollars on a shitty Jets team. I think a lot of GMs should be worried about what they're going to get, and then all his off the field stuff. I mean, I don't know. He seems like a headache, and I want him back. The NCAA just gave out an extra year of eligibility to all the athletes today. I wonder if he can go play for state, so Mel Tucker has at least one weapon, because that would be nice to have.
Blabbering with unfactual information, which is confusing the general public.
Why you gotta bring? I gotta bring him into this. Not right now. I'm on a roll.
Once a week.
And then the only other one I could think of, but I don't know that one. I don't know they could afford him. Two, they're already having enough problems trying to spread the ball around. The only other one is if you want to get him out of contender, send him to Kansas City. But I don't think Kansas City could afford him. Not to mention Mahomes, Kelsey, Hill. Add Le'Veon in there, and I'm forgetting someone. There has to be someone.
Edwards-Helaire.
That's a lot of players and not a lot of football. So I will say the only other one, I didn't want to mention this one because this will never happen, and if it does happen, it just shows that the front office doesn't know what they're doing. I did hear people think that it would be an amazing idea for him to just head on right down to Tampa, where they can just add another running back to the stable. And that's not even a joke. I forget who I heard say, but I did hear it on ESPN today.
Oh,
he said
God.
Tampa Bay would be the spot for him. I do think that the best spot for him might actually be out in California with the Chargers. I really think he could make an impact there. He doesn't have to be the guy on every play like he did in New York, because, hey, you've got Sam Darnold, and you have no one to throw to for Sam Darnold.
That's a strong fit. I just worry. My concern with them is that the environment he wants to go to. Does he want to go to a team that's already a playoff contender, or does he want to make a team make that push?
But
if he's okay with making the push, then yeah, that's a great fit.
But I'll make the argument to you that any team you're going to realistically put in playoff contention already has the running back, and I don't see Le'Veon coming to a situation where he's not the guy. Ego or not, he like the Derrick Henry thing. It makes a lot of sense for him to do it. I just don't see Le'Veon being that guy that can swallow his pride and say, "Okay, I'm the backup running back." To me, he any situation he goes to, he has to feel like he's running back one from day one. So, and the only team I can think of right now, just because I'm blanking on their running back name, the only team that's a playoff contender right now that doesn't have a established number one back could potentially be the Seattle Seahawks. And that's just because Russell's making it get done everywhere else right now.
Dude's playing so good. It's a good point about his ego taking it. That's why I suggested the Bills, because I think Devin Singletary ain't stopping him from being the lead back.
And I like Buffalo for that. I think Allen is amazing. They actually would be a great fit for him. I think he's kind of burnt out on New York, if you ask me.
Fair.
Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, the last thing I've got for him is that he just made a lot of money in New York, and the personality in his wants is going to drive where he wants to go. He's got to be like Patrick Marleau going back to San Jose one more time to try to get a cup. Like this is Bell trying to get his trophy. It has to be. After this year, he'll be irrelevant.
I was really hoping we were going to get through an entire show without talking about Patrick Marleau going back to the Sharks.
Very relevant. Very understood by a lot of our audience.
Look, what do we know? Yeah, what do
so
you know?
Topical.
He's probably going to sign with like the Miami Dolphins or something. What do we know? We're just speculating. Moving on though, Lions are back 1-2. One and three. I got my hopes up. 1-3, taking on the 1-4 Jacksonville Jaguars. Like always, going to do our predictions and give you our player to watch in this game. Real quick, the numbers are: Lions are a 60% favorite, so you know that's not going to go well. Spread is only 3, over under 54.5. At this point in the season, Matt Stafford 83 of 137 for 1,017 yards, 8 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. Like we said last week, Adrian Peterson's our leading rusher. TJ Hockenson, leading receiver with 180 yards and 2 touchdowns. Jay loves that. Other side of the ball, Gardner Minshew 137 of 196 for 1,400 yards. 10 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. They don't really have any. Their best runners got 330 on the ground, and leading receiver 270 with. That's Laviska Shenault, right? I just want to make sure. Their leading receiver. Am I the only one that knows the name of this person? Laviska Shenault. Gotcha. Leading receiver, Laviska
Shenault. I still don't know what you said.
I believe Shenault is how you pronounce that.
I checked it, yep. So like I said, Jay, 60% favorite for the Lions. Spread's only 3. Over under 54.5. How do you see this game shaking out, and who's your player to watch this week in this Lions Jaguars matchup?
All right, let's start with the bright and sunny side of the pillow. The player I'm watching is still Hockenson. We're on. You can lock me in. We're on lock hock watch.
Hold on. Did you just say the bright and shiny side of the pillow?
Well, the other side's dark. It's upside down.
I think you're mixing and matching.
I know the expression is the cooler side of the pillow, but there's technically a
don't you
side the
ever
the
take away from Stuart Scott ever again. It is cooler than the other
own.
Side of the pillow for the rest of time. No pillow reference in sports other than cooler than the other side.
But there's a dark side of the pillow.
There's
you
got to
think about that
moon.
Before you go to bed tonight. Yeah, but no one likes Pink Floyd. Listen, Eric, when
do
you go to
sleep
bed tonight,
with the do you sleep
that.
With the lights on?
Where's Mike?
You guys, we're falling apart here.
Do you sleep with the lights on that your pillow is shiny at night?
What's sleep? What is this sleep you speak of?
Fair. He's got 2 kids.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Father and kid, yeah.
Anyway, sorry. We're still on Hawk Watch for another week with Jay.
All right, so Hockenson will be the apple of my eye, if I'm going to use correct verbiage here. But going on to the Lions and the Jags. Jags have won one game this year, which was in the fourth quarter against the Colts, and the Farce of Rivers, which sounds like another album of a shitty band. Who have they played? Watson, Burrows, and Fitzpatrick, and they all took care of business with them. They held Gardner Minshew under 25 points. I don't think the Lions are going to be able to do that. We will come out. We will look good in the first two quarters, and we are going to allow the Jags to come back and beat us. I think that, you know, the Jaguars are able to score across the board all four quarters of the game. There's not a weakness. I mean, they're a weak team, but they know how to consistently score across the whole board. We can't do shit in the second half of the third and in all of the fourth quarter. We don't do anything in those quarters. So I'm predicting that we're going to have the lead when we go to half. The Jags are going to come back and march down the field. It's probably going to be who can get the field goal in the fourth quarter. I think that's going to be the Jaguars, and I have the Lions losing 27-30 to the Jags.
Okay, 27-30. Wow. Russ, over to you. Your player of the week, player to watch, and outcome of this game.
If the Lions lose this game, burn it all down. Burn it all down immediately. This is a Jaguars team that just gave the Houston Texans their first win of the season. The Houston Texans, who were first ravaged by Bill O'Brien and then finally fired him. So as to say, this is a bad team. It was not a close game. They have Gardner Minshew. That's who you have to worry about. But the guy's kind of turnover prone right now. Four interceptions, one fumble loss. That's why my player to watch is Jamie Collins. Last time the Lions won, they forced Kyler Murray to turn over the ball. Jamie Collins was a big part of that. Had an interception himself, had a deflection that led to a second interception. So watching him, seeing that hopefully on the bye they scheme up, maybe rushing more than four guys at once. We'll see. Probably not. But the key thing to watch here is Stafford's on pace to take the most sacks he's ever taken in his entire career. He's on pace for 48 sacks, 12 sacks in four games. Jacksonville only has three sacks so far in five games. So I know they say don't count your chickens until there's two in the bush. I can mix and match too. But that's going to be super important to keep that pass rush back. Even if Josh Allen returns from injury, who is their leading sack getter, whatever we want to say there, with two, you got to contain him. You got to contain the meager Jacksonville pass rush. And please, God, get some turnovers. I got 27-21. I'm saying the Lions win. Oh, man, they can't lose this game.
But they're going to.
No. I have to hang on to that shred of optimism, because if I'm going to take them to lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars, the 2020 era Jacksonville Jaguars, oh, boy, I'll just pack it in at that point.
Yeah. You guys aren't allowed to use metaphors ever again. It's just against the rule.
You didn't like that one?
No. It's not I didn't like yours. I'm still trying to figure out why the hell this guy's got a shiny pillow. Like, seriously, get a duller, like, pillowcase or something. What the hell?
Blinding.
Oh, it's the reflection off the head onto that. Gotcha. Caught up now. I'm with Russ. This is a win. If it's not a win, burn this to the ground. I'm talking Anthony Anderson and White Cat and Harold and Kumar. Burn this mother to the ground. Just burn it all down. That being said, my player to watch is Gardner Minshew. Because, one, it can go one of two ways. Either we're going to see what Uncle Rico would have really looked like in the NFL, which is bad, or Gardner Minshew is going to prove that he can actually play in this league and it's going to make it competitive. Because, like Russ said, I agree. That's about it. It's Gardner Minshew trying to make something happen. There's a reason this guy has thrown the ball almost 200 times in five weeks. They don't got a lot else going for him. So I am going to take the Lions, and I'm going to take them comfortably. I'm going to say this is a 31-17 game. Lions off the bye. They're going to go after this.
Ooh.
They're going to get this going. 31-17. Now, I want to ask you this before we move on to the NBA. We've seen it with the Lions. It was very tough to view. We've seen it with the Browns. It was a little bit more enjoyable. We might be seeing it with the Atlanta Falcons, a team that doesn't win a game all year. Russ, stop using your computer. I want to ask you this question blind. I don't want either of you to have this information.
Got him.
Will the Atlanta Falcons go 0-16 this year, Russ?
No, they won't. No, Julio Jones and Matt Ryan by themselves will, by accident, get two wins. They might not win much more than that. Maybe they're a four-win team. There's, like, Dan Orlovsky running out of the back in the end zone was a starting quarterback for an 0-16 team. That's the kind of talent you need to have to mess up and get to 0-16. They don't got that. right?
Julio Jones has to get on the field before we have this conversation.
We got 16 games. They got 11 more. He just got to get out there for one.
Meanwhile, Justin's doing his research. Justin, will the Atlanta Falcons go 0-16 this year?
No, because the Atlanta Falcons play the Lions.
I knew it. That's why I didn't want him to look. That's why I didn't want him to look. I wanted to get his answer, hoping he'd say yes, like they will, and then I'd be like, you know, they play the Lions. Go ahead, Jay.
Well, I want you to answer the question too, but one quick thing. Let's bet on this Lions game. I'm confident in the Jags. I'm confident in my analysis.
Jay, you're also four in the hole because none of your guys won.
The only time you can get out of the hole is when you put the shovel down. I want to put the shovel down this weekend, and I want Jaguars to get me this dub. So okay. Can we have a bet, please?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take the bet.
I'm going to owe you. Yeah,
100 times.
Dude, you're going to have to buy me a bar by the end of this season.
Well, you guys are dealing from a position of power right now, okay? You guys are up by four on me.
All right, so I'm not going to try to do this math now because it'll be really bad. I'm going to ballpark it. We have four more episodes, maybe five, before we hit the 18th of November, which will make 3 years. So we'll be coming up to our end of our third season. So I'm wondering how deep in the hole Jay will be by the end of the third season. That's roughly four episodes. I don't have a calendar right in front of me, but roughly, you know, we figure we do an episode a week. That's probably about four, maybe five episodes, just depending on the timing. I'm wondering how deep in the hole Jay will be by the time we get to the end of the third season.
I'm a break even.
Answering your question, Jay. No, I'm right there with Russ. There is too much talent on that Atlanta team. And honestly, Matt Ryan's not one of the guys I would put in the quote-unquote talent. I think Matt Ryan has been very lucky to have what he has around him. But there is too much talent for that team to go 0-16. If that team goes 0-16, that is the perfect example of, okay, we need to start from scratch, and which is crazy to say. But hold on to Julio. Hold on to one or two other pieces. Everybody else, it's a fire sale. Make your best offer. We'll see what we can do because this team literally has gone from being a Super Bowl contender who were two quarters away from winning a Super Bowl a few years ago to just bottom of the barrel, can't figure it out, kind of looks like a team that's never played together before. So I'm going to say no. There's no way they go 0-16, Rusty.
Now that I actually get to use my computer and look at their schedule, I'm less confident.
I was looking at the schedule too, though. I mean, all right, just for those listening, this week they play Minnesota, followed by they have to play us. Then they they're at Minnesota. They are their home, but then they have to go to Carolina, take Denver.
Who they just lost to.
Yep, play Denver at home. Denver's not a very good team. That's a chance. That I'm giving that a good chance. Then they go to New Orleans. They have no chance there. Honestly, I never thought we would say this. I think they lose by over two touchdowns to the Raiders. This Raiders team looks awesome right now. They are just fun to watch.
Yeah.
So at home, back-to-back weeks they're home because they have to play the Raiders and then the Saints again. They go to the Chargers. I don't think that's a win. The Buccaneers at home, Chiefs at home. Then they go to Arrowhead and then to Tampa Bay. So honestly, if you go through it, I think us, which is, it's funny to say, but us, the Broncos, and maybe sneaking out one of the two games against the Chiefs because the Chiefs don't seem to even know what down it is. That would be about it. This legitimately could be a 3-16 team, assuming they don't squeak out some kind of upset over the Saints or the Raiders, because I can't think they're going to be anywhere near close to the Chiefs. So, yeah, and that's crazy to think that the Panthers, who they aren't a great team, but how are we over favoring them right now is even that crazy. That's why I didn't want you guys to look at the schedule. I want to see if either of you had the balls to call it as a no way and then look at that schedule and tell me they really could be a 2-14, 3-16 team by the end of this season. And that's crazy to say, because I think everybody probably would have had Atlanta picked to be at least a 9-win team at the start of this year with all the talent they had.
At least 500. It's a tough division, but this is brutal.
It's bad. It's very bad. All right, moving on. Obviously, we'll see how those all those predictions go. Jay, you got yourself a bet. Are you taking the Jaguars straight up? Like, you really think straight up That's all. You don't want anything.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm down by three. I just want one on this one. So bet of one. I'm down by three. Give me the Jags.
You remember you were complaining that we were operating from a position of power? It's because you're giving power away. He just offered you points, and you're like, nah, I'm good.
Okay, moving on.
What are the points? No, I don't want the points. No,
No, no, straight up, you called it. It's locked. It's put it
yeah,
in.
No, great. This is this is just winner, loser. Give me straight up.
Listen, our bookie wearing the telemarketer headphone set, he's got it locked in. Money shipped your way. It's locked in. Stop it.
PGA was a push, correct? Because none of our guys won.
Wolf actually made it. Wolf made it the farthest. So, Wolf made it into the playoffs. So, yeah, no one. That was a push. Moving on, we're going to talk a little. We're going to lead off with the we're going to talk NBA. We're going to lead off with the finals. Work our way back because we want to talk a little bit of Pistons. But Jay, since you become a Piston or a basketball fan, you now have officially seen a full NBA playoffs, wonky as it was with quarantine. I want to ask you, your Miami Vice wannabe didn't wear their jerseys for some reason team.
I know.
They gave it a really good run for the fact that they're one of their best players didn't play, but the beginning of the first game and a little bit of the last game. I mean, I want to ask you both, because we've only seen it once or twice in the history of the NBA. Fair to say that LeBron played great. He really did. But fair to say that Jimmy Butler did enough to merit being the finals MVP, even though he didn't win the NBA championship.
I'm going to go with no.
Okay.
Personally, because it's got to be one of those things that you have to be transcendental to even be in that conversation to win that when your team loses.
Well, there's only been one person to ever do it, and he's the logo of the NBA. So
and Jerry that's West. What we're Jerry talking West. About. What you have to look at you.
Justin was so happy. He's like, Jerry West. I know this. Yes, Jerry West won the MVP of the finals, even though they didn't win. So right.
And
it just shows you.
That's the level you have to operate on to really be in the conversation for that. And like Jimmy Butler, I think, earned a lot of respect for a lot of people that overlooked him, especially we saw him in Philly last year. But that's a little much to talk about, I think, there. I still don't think he was the best player on the court.
Okay, that's fair. It really is fair, Jay.
Yeah, no, he only gets what LeBron apparently thinks he needs, is respect. Butler gets his respect for what he did. After that, no, I mean, Lakers took care of business, man. I mean, he got injured, and then it was just the Lakers show after that. So, as Russ has shown me a very graphic visualization of what the Lakers did, and it's exactly true.
I will put it this way. I agree with Russ that the bar, when it did happen the one time, was set so high that I think it's near impossible that anyone could do it again to win that award and not be someone who won the title. Over the years, they've made cases of, like, I remember a few years ago when it was Golden State and Cleveland every year. There was one year the case was made LeBron should have gotten the finals MVP because he literally carried the team with Kyrie playing terribly, Kevin Love being hurt. LeBron had to put the team on his back, carry them, and I think they still lost in five or six, but it was just that fact that he kept them in it long enough to not even get swept. So I will say that. That being said, if anyone was going to do it, I think Jimmy Butler did enough to deserve it. Jimmy Butler... They showed this guy after games getting up off the podium from press conferences. He looked like our grandparents, bent over, couldn't stand up, just gasped. They said at one point in one of the games he sat for 42 seconds.
Yeah.
That pretty much adds up to the timeouts. He sat down for the timeouts, but played every second. That is unbelievable. So I will say he could have won it, but yes, I agree. That it's too high of a bar that there's one or two people on the planet who could maybe be it, and it's LeBron and probably Giannis are the only two people that could put on performances, and you make that conversation and believe it could happen. Following up, though, because I want to get to the Pistons, I want to ask you guys this, because I thought about this one long and hard. I don't think it's the NFL. I don't think it's Major League Baseball, and I would dare to say it's probably not the NHL. But I want to ask you, and Jay, go first here. Have we reached a point now where you no longer win championships, you buy championships? With these free agents, guys going to teams, these super teams forming all over, have we reached a point now where you're not winning a championship, you're just buying an NBA title?
I would disagree on the NHL front, and Russ did a wonderful...
I said it's none of those. I'm saying just the NBA. The NFL doesn't really do it.
Okay.
NHL doesn't really... I mean, if you guys see a case, please point it out to me. But baseball was... Steinbrenner used to do it. But nowadays in baseball, I feel like you don't get that as much. A lot of these guys want all the money, and then you build around them with pieces. Whereas it used to be, you know, people would take a little less money to bring in other guys.
I understand your question now. What I was referencing is when Russ was talking about puck luck, probably like in season one of our podcast, and how just chaotic the puck luck is,
mm-hmm.
We're good there. So going back to your question, in basketball, yeah. I mean, I'm very new into watching basketball, and I don't think the word team chemistry is anything that anyone says next to the NBA in terms of a five-man roster that's got to be just like, no big superstars, just be this gritty team, kind of like how, you know, Miami was built around Butler. It's about being a three-headed, two-headed monster, and everything else is just a shoe-in on the bench and just move your parts around. Like, you buy your championships by crafting around superstars in the NBA. And I think that's a trend that I don't know how that ever leaves.
Okay, that's fair.
No, I think if any league it's possible to buy a championship, it would be the NBA. Now, the cap makes it difficult that you at least got to be able to draft one or two of those guys. And the Lakers kind of got away from it because they were able to trade for Anthony Davis, right? And that helped a lot. But it's, think of it this way. Hockey, you've got 18 forwards alone, right? You're talking about, you know, a 20-plus man roster, guys out there every time. NBA, you maybe got like an 8-man rotation going. Right,
you know, you carry about 12 to 13 guys at best, maybe 10 of them see playing time at best.
Right, so you're talking like we brought up Jimmy Butler sitting for 42 seconds, right? So of that time of player contributions, he was at least 20% of the minutes
mm-hmm.
for the entire team. You're not going to get that for any other sport. You know, football, maybe you say, hey, the quarterback can hold the ball, you know, almost every play he can have a direct impact on, but there's still 10 other guys that got to do all their jobs. Basketball, one guy can make a much bigger difference. So yes, you can bring in and pay for one guy to come in, and that can make a much bigger difference. I can't say I'm surprised it's the Lakers that got us asking this question, though. It is not the first time.
No, it's absolutely not the first time. I just think that, I mean, you got to go back a little bit, but to me, the first super team that I can really remember that was built out of money not drafting was the Boston Celtics when Garnett and Ray Allen went there to play with Paul Pierce. Outside of that, I mean, yeah, like LeBron and Kyrie, and Kyrie was drafted, so part of that it's hard to take. LeBron coming back, it almost doesn't feel like a free agent signing. It just seems like he went to play overseas, and then, or like Jordan going to play baseball. He went to Miami for a few years to, you know, do something different and came back.
Gambling problems?
Yeah. The only team you can honestly, pretty much, the only team you can honestly make the statement of that is a super team that didn't build, they weren't built through cash flow, is Golden State. They drafted everybody. KD coming for a couple years, yes. But you can make an argument they still would have been in the finals even without KD. KD just added to the benefit. So it's just more and more now, it seems like drafting does make a difference. But right now, it's just whoever's willing to go deepest into the checkbook is going to probably win the title. And if you're Milwaukee, if you're Giannis, you're talking to those guys going, go deep into the checkbook. I'll push a little money aside. We could win a title if you go buy someone to give me a real chance. And it's just the Lakers don't seem to be afraid to do that. They know how the league views them, so it's like, it's kind of like Al Davis with the Raiders. He knew how everybody saw him, so he was going to be that way. That's how the Lakers are. We know you think we're buying titles. Well, guess what? We just won another title. Seems to work pretty well. So that's how I see it. It's just, it becomes that conversation of an unfair game, because you do have those smaller franchises who can't necessarily fork over these big, big contracts to these guys to get them there, and therefore they're left trying to do it, you know, smart through free agency, smart through drafting, Jay.
Yeah, no, the other parallel I'm trying to think about here is, like, in baseball, I remember all the times that the Yankees were, like, their payroll was, like, through the roof. I don't know how many championships they won when they're trying to throw money at it. So
They won some.
Yeah, a few. Yeah.
Well, that didn't hurt, though, that Steinbrenner didn't have a problem just paying the overage. He just paid it out
of his salary cap.
Yeah, so that was a big problem. But for our Pistons, obviously, we're still, it's kind of funny. The NBA draft is on the night of the end of our third season, so we'll probably cover it a little bit more as we get closer. But I wanted to ask you two, as we get ready for it, it's still basically a month away, so we got time. Russ, when you look at the Pistons, we talk about need all the time. We've said we don't think Blake is really the guy to be building around because we can't guarantee, A, that he'll be here, or B, that he'll ever be the player he was while in L.A. So when we're talking about this and looking at it, what's the direction you see the Pistons having to go as we start to kind of build up and make a push to actually be able to contend in the East?
Well, I'll put the punchline right out there right away. The way they should go is whoever the hell is decent, whoever the hell is talent, right? Take the best player available, because we're talking about contracts 2 years out. Right now it's Sekou and Blake Griffin. That's it. And by the time that this draft pick is ready to be whatever they're going to be talent-wise, who knows what's on this roster? We can count Sekou. We can hopefully count Wood, right? And after that, God knows. So you don't need to talk about fit. You just need to get talent, because future-wise, completely deficient when it comes to talent. Personally, I like Haliburton, right? I like the idea of getting a point guard there. Bring in Killian Hayes. You got a little French connection. Be the Detroit Pistons, right, between him and Sekou. That could be fun. That's marketable. But literally, if you say a guy that projects to be an NBA starter, cool. Good by me, because this is not a very deep draft class. Find a guy with that one strong skill that he can hang on and build from there, preferably a three-point shooter. God, wouldn't that be nice to have another one of those soon? But I don't know that you can talk about need, because you damn near need everything if you're the Pistons.
I'm gonna change mine a little bit from when we talked, you know, when we were talking a couple months ago about this and trying to lay out the thing. I said point guard. I said if we want to make a move down a little bit, Cassius is a great one. I don't think that whichever ball it is, LaMelo, LaMelo, LaFello, whatever the hell his name is, Bello Ball. I don't think Bello Ball is ready to play in this league the way they think he is. So, but as I'm looking over this roster, I see one thing on here that is very, very scary to me. Can either of
just
you,
one thing.
Just one thing. Can either of you guys tell me the tallest player on our team, how tall he is?
Oh, that's got to be Thon Maker, and I think he is 7'3"?
No, just 7 foot.
7'1"?
Seven foot.
That's okay. Close. Now, that was close.
That's great. You want a 7-footer. Can someone tell me what's wrong with this? Thon Maker, 7 foot, 218 pounds.
I weigh
220 pounds. How the hell do I weigh more than you when I'm a foot and a half shorter than you?
I have an answer. I don't think you'll like it.
Shut up. yeah, you're right. Something is bigger than on me than it is on him, okay? I see. Let me. I'm coming to you, Jay.
To me,
it's size. They need, whether it's free agency, trade, in the draft, trade away that pick for it. You need to go out and you need to get a tank of a player, a big guy that we can put down low that has that skill set. Get what we wanted out of Andre Drummond. Get that in the trade. Get the guy that he was supposed to be. Whoever that is, I don't know. There are far wiser people than me that can make that decision. But we need a big guy down middle that protects that rim, that is still going to get the rebounds, going to get the putbacks, can go out there and average 20 and 10 like it's absolutely nothing. We need that and everything. You have Luke Kennard. You have Sekou Doumbouya. You have Derrick Rose. You have Blake Griffin, assuming Blake Griffin comes back. those are pieces that are going to find a way to get the ball in the hole if they know there's going to be second chance opportunities. We can't have a bunch of shots go up and we have 0% chance of getting the rebound because that's going to kill us.
So to help out this size issue that we're having, let me offer you some of my ideas. Now, granted, again, this is like the whole boobs is fun take. I'm very much new to this. I'm the outsider looking in. We need size and strength. And when we kind of touched on the draft class for this year, my guy, and he still is my guy, is Obi Toppin. He looks like a grown-ass man already. He's big. He's almost 7 foot. He's a power forward. I think he provides that steadiness to our team. You know, I watched Kentavious Caldwell-Pope win a championship. I'm like, oh, hey, I know you. We used to have you. I don't need another Luke Kennard. I don't need another Caldwell-Pope. I need a big man. I need a Draymond Green to get on this team. Maybe Obi Toppin's that guy. But he's in that area of us where we're drafting, so I'm hoping it's Toppin.
It's fair. I like it. Obviously,
correct me if I'm wrong, by all means, because I still don't know what I'm talking about, but I think I do.
Yeah. None of us really know what we're talking about. We just say it confidently, and it sounds like it makes people believe that we're speaking intelligently.
You're just going to give away all our secrets. Okay.
If I'm going down, you're going down with me. obviously, we have a month to go. There's going to be developments. There's going to be things that we're going to have to talk about as we get there. This is just a rough draft of a rough draft, or for me, the final paper I turned in without ever proofreading it. So you could see one of us didn't go to college. moving on, we have the CJ Cup this year, usually played overseas in, it's either Japan or China. I want to say China. Could be
Korea.
South Korea, that place. Obviously, because of COVID restrictions, they moving here. And Jay, I want to ask you, do you know where they're having it?
Where are they having it? I am.
Russ, give him the course. Jay, tell me if you've ever heard of this course before.
Shadow Creek.
Oh, that sounds like Michigan.
No, it's in Vegas. It's where Phil and Tiger had the match.
They're
playing
cute.
It at Shadow Creek.
Cute.
Like always, dude, you tell me you watched that. You've rewatched that many times, like I have. So I'm just testing you.
I have, but I don't know geographically where that shit was at. It was on my TV, and that's all I cared about.
It was in Las Vegas, Nevada.
That place.
We have our we sent out the pairings. Jay, do you want to double down on this bet too before we make our picks?
No, I'm a one bet man per week limit. I'd like to gamble virtually responsibly, so I'm going to stick to one bet. But what I am going to hitch, I'm not going to ruin another analogy today. The player I will be selecting, Russ had the painful experience of giving up on DJ. And the one time he gave up on DJ, and DJ's not playing because he got COVID, but the one time he gave up, he won. I need to stick to my Rory theory. I need Rory to win one. So I'm going with the pairing of Cam Garcia and Rory, only for the fact that I watched Russ make a mistake, and I learned, because as my elder statesman, he shows me the way, I'm sticking with Rory.
All right. Russ?
I'm just glad you didn't hitch all your eggs in one basket there.
That's problematic.
It would be. So, we only had four pairings to pick from, and I could have gone and read all of the nice details you provided for us, and honestly, huge time save. It helped a lot, and if it was in South Korea still, I had a pick. But since it's not, and since I had no idea what Shadow Creek was, I went to their website to try and find some stuff out, and let me tell you, every single hole they have, and I got to read some of these off because they're fantastic, they have a quote from a famous person, such as hole 4 is a par 5, and Wayne Gretzky said about it, "Surreal." That's it. That's the whole quote. That's what we're dealing with here. But to get to my picks, Aaron Rodgers is actually quoted for two different holes. Only person to be quoted on two different holes. Now, Aaron Rodgers, let's dig into this. His coach, first name, Matt. Teammates, he has a Ty, he has a John. Ty Summers, John Runyon, and of course, Coach Matt LaFleur. Oh, who do we have? Matthew Wolf, John Rahm, Tyrell Hatton. I'm reading the tea leaves here. We got something going on. That's what I'm going with.
Okay, I like it.
That was nice.
One day, we're going to release this video on Twitter. We're going to give Russ the pairings, and we're going to put a camera on him for the preparation time just to watch how, because honestly, people, like, you say you want to see how things are made. I don't know if you want to see what has to go through the process of this man to come up with these, because I never would have been able to put that together, but all power to you, my friend.
How do you make picks?
Like this. Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Sung Jae-im. Two of the best players in the world. Justin Thomas is arguably the best player in the world week to week. Brooks Koepka, I don't know. Jay says he watched it. I don't know if he did. Long ball doesn't really hurt you very much on Shadow Creek, if I'm not mistaken, Jay. These guys both bombed it, played pretty well. Brooks is there. Sung Jae-im is an amazing player. Got his first win at the 2020 Honda Classic this year. If you're on the winner's circle in COVID time, you're a good golfer because you had to battle a lot more than just the golf course. Look, Hatton, Rahm, Wolf, all great. Wolf is, well, I mean, honestly, it stinks, but Wolf has been a couple putts away from being a three-time mm-hmm. winner and a major champion this year. Wolf is not a bad pick to go for, but Sung Jae-im doesn't have any of those, unfortunately. Justin Thomas has a major. Brooks has a couple majors. Brooks was one of the very few people to ever have a chance to go for three straight U.S. Open titles. Fell short to Gary Woodland last year. That's not a group you want to bet against. There's some great players there. So I'm Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Sung Jae-im to win the CJ Cup. Should be fun. I enjoyed watching in Shadows Creek. Justin, I don't know if you did.
it's in Nevada.
It's in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I'm about to be in your Nevada in a minute.
I don't even know what that means.
I'm a little scared.
Because one of us preps better than the rest, each week we give him his own little topic, little part of the show. So I'm going to turn the keys over to Russ. You know what? I couldn't think of any way to word it, Russ, so that's what I'm going to keep it as. This is Russ's jersey number question.
Yes, just vague enough to make almost no sense to anyone. So we threw a hypothetical out there, and actually I should hop on Twitter and see how it's going, because we did put a poll, and please go out and vote. It'll be up for the next couple days as well.
I'm already in front of you. I'm right there. Give me one second.
Well, I've got it up now. So the idea was Vladislav Namestnikov has just signed in Detroit, right? Two-year deal, nephew of Slava Kozlov, mm-hmm. right? And anyone who's was a Wings fan of a certain age knows, hey, that's number 13. That was the 13 before we had Datsyuk. Well, we've had Datsyuk since, and that was a special place in all of our hearts. But now if Namestnikov comes to Iserman and says, hey, your old teammate, that's my uncle, I want his number, is that okay? Would that be okay with Detroit sports fans to dance on the recently buried grave of Pavel Datsyuk's Detroit Red Wing career and issue 13 to another player? Right now the poll, 58.3% of you say no, too soon. But that's only 6 out of 10 people saying it. So that's 40% of them are saying, yeah, give it to them. Are we ready to bury Datsyuk as a Red Wing already?
I want a recount on the Twitter poll. Those numbers got to be wrong. But here's the thing for me. I've got a kid, right? And I go to some things, and kids, they do things like sports and activities. They participate in groups, and everyone's got to get a trophy. Everyone's got to feel special. I don't like that when it comes to jersey numbers, okay? There's a reason why there's only a certain amount of numbers that are lifted up in the rafters, and they're retired. Datsyuk, in his own right, on his merits of being a player, was great. He's phenomenal. He was the best of what we had at the time. Him and Zetterberg are married to each other, and both of them drew from each other. And my point that I'm getting to is if Datsyuk played by himself and he was the lone wolf on that team, maybe I would say don't give him that number. Mm-mm. Datsyuk and Zetterberg were together. I've got no problem giving away any number that's not retired. I've got no problem with that at all. But come in, wear the number, try to get up there. Like Michigan does their circumpompensance of certain numbers that they give to certain players on their football team. Screw that. No one cares. It's about winning championships, okay? Datsyuk had a lot of game-winning goals. He had a lot of game-winning goals in the playoffs. He had 7 of them throughout his career. He did a lot of good things for our team. not enough that if Fedorov's not up there, damn near Datsyuk does not belong up there yet. And Nemestikov could come in and honor Kozlov and wear the 13th. I wouldn't think two seconds about being upset. So I'm fine with it. I'm fine with any number. Like we talked about Kelvin Johnson, give the number away. I do not care. It doesn't mean anything to me at all.
All right. Let's pick through this bullshit.
That's usually a true statement.
Here we go. One, we've had the conversation a million times before. We'll have the conversation a million times more until it happens. At some point, 91 will be in the rafters. At some point, it will happen. Okay, I've told you I don't think he should be, but at some point it's going to happen. That being said, I would bet you, and if you want to make this bet, and this can be a side bet that doesn't even have to count for the show, I will bet you 13 or 40 are in the rafters before 91. Because, listen, Fedorov was a different kind of player. He really was. He was an elite player. Datsyuk was the next generation of Fedorov. He was. He was the next thing. One of the best two-way players. The guy could do things with a stick that no person had ever seen before, and now everybody's trying to do. Yeah, that, Russ. So, and you got to understand. Well, you got to understand. Jay, look at it this way. If in Datsyuk's been retired for 5 years now.
I think a little longer than that, but it sounds about right.
He's 42 now.
I want to say he left the league in like 14 or 15.
While Russ is looking. He's doing backhanded top shelf goals in the KHL right now, so he's still killing it.
Anyway, but I'm just saying, if let's say in 2007, someone had come in and said, I want 91. Sergei's only been gone for a couple years. He's still in the league. He's just not here. I think it would have been a lot harder to accept that 91 jersey being on someone else's back at that time. It's the same with Sergei. Everyone who's watching the Red Wings right now remembers Pav. They remember what he did. So I think it's a lot harder for that 13 jersey to get put on. Would I have a problem with it? No. Would it really, like, at the end of the day, is it going to make me go, oh, I'm not watching the Red Wings this year because they're doing this? No, not even a little bit. There's a lot of other reasons I'm not going to watch the Red Wings. But I just think that I said this to lead off the show. Numbers now carry a lot more of a sentimental thing to us than they do to the franchise. Yes, number five, it's retired. Did it mean everything to Detroit, to the franchise? No, it was a number. To us, it says the greatest defenseman to ever play the game of hockey. Number 19, the greatest captain in all of professional sports. Though, like, those numbers mean something that way to us. But like you said, 81, there's no way anyone should ever wear a Honolulu blue and silver 81 ever again. It should never happen. There's no reason, and this is more for me than anyone else, there's no reason anyone should ever wear number 4 again for the Lions if they haven't retired it already. Jason Hansen was one of the greatest kickers of all time.
I was like, all right, I know Brett Favre made the Lions lose a lot of games, but come on.
It's that. But as we were doing that, and Russ, you posed this question, I want you to give your opinion, but I want to ask you, there were a couple numbers that one's been retired for a while, so it doesn't mean as much. The other one is for sure going to retire here soon. I want to ask you guys, along these Red Wings line, if someone wanted to put on the jersey 25, would you be okay with it? I mean, I get that Green won it, but I feel like that number means a lot more to the city than a lot of other numbers.
I mean, ultimately, yeah. I'm going to say anyone can wear it. For the same reason that I would be okay, not with Nemestikov necessarily doing it, and ultimately if he... answer my original question. If he said, hey, this is because of my uncle, then yeah, I'm gonna be fine with it. But say there wasn't that connection, I wouldn't be, because it's a little too soon. I looked it up, 15-16 was Datsyuk's last year. So it's been 4 seasons. Right? So my kind of general rule of thumb is all of his teammates have to be gone. So that there's not that kind of overlap, and a minimum of 5 years to let that breathe. When he's been a historic person like that, 25, if the year after McCarty left, someone else grabbed it, yeah, that's kind of in poor taste because he was such a fan favorite. And like you say, yeah, numbers probably mean a whole lot more to us as fans than they do the players because well, that's a brand, and that's a brand recognition, right? And you root for the logo on the front, sure, but you buy the numbers on the back.
Okay.
And you shell a lot of money that way. So now, if someone wears it, I'm not going to think about McCarty as much because enough time has passed. I'm still going to remember McCarty, right? And when Green wore it, yeah, it reminded me of him time to time, but it was still okay because enough time had passed.
Okay.
I think we're almost there for Datsuk, but now, just not quite.
Here's my follow-up because I was kind of racking my brain trying to pick numbers that haven't been retired yet, but that are going to hold that kind of meaning. And these are the only two I can think of. They're both on the Tigers. Both of these guys don't wear these numbers, so let them be what they are. But I'm going to say, next year, Mize and Torkelson are both, let's just say, they decide Mize and Torkelson are both going to be full-time, up-here, everyday players. Jay, I'll let you go first. They come into the office. They sit down with, apparently, Al Avila is still there for what reason we'll never understand, but he's still there. And they say, Torkelson sits down and says, I want 24. And Mize says, I want 35. Are you okay with that? That's Verlander and Mickey. Those are the numbers that kept the Tigers afloat for a decade. Are you okay with that? Especially since I don't know about 35, 24, in my opinion, gets retired the second he hangs up his cleats. In my opinion. But that's for other reasons.
So, I mean, if it's retired, that's one thing. But say that they don't retire.
No, I'm not saying, like, they're going to put the plaque up the day he retires. I'm just saying, like, you know you're going to retire it eventually.
Yeah, I mean, for that situation, I think both conversations can happen at the same time. If they haven't retired him yet, yeah, give someone else the number. It's just a number to me. It's like the greatest of the great get to have that moment where, like, no, that's their number. Stafford could leave, and we could give the next quarterback Stafford's number, and I'd be fine with that. Like, another example, just to keep continuing down this, like, if we got Lafreniere, I don't care if he takes 40. I don't care if he takes 13 if we got him. He can walk up and take it. He's not getting Messi's number in New York, because that was the number that he used when he was playing for his prior team. But, like, I have no allegiance to it as much as most people do. And that might just be me. But Cabrera could leave and give Torkelson the next thing. Like, if I don't care if they're a bum. I don't care if you're Draper's son or if you're Lafreniere. You're getting whatever number you want.
You have no heart. That's what you're saying. You have no heart.
I mean, I've always watched sports in the lens of what have you done for me lately. And if you're not winning championships, then I don't care what you do. Show up and play. That's all I want from my players. I don't care what numbers.
All right, Russ.
So if you're worrying about what have you done for me lately, and the person has done something for you lately, shouldn't you honor that?
Yes, as long as they're actively getting paid by me. If they're gone and out the door, then your numbers.
Well, the Red Wings are actively playing or paying Henrik Zetterberg, aren't they? Like, I'm not mistaken
on
that.
Long term IR.
So,
yep.
So 93, yeah. 93 is not an option either. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it is this year now.
No, I get that. I get that. Yeah.
I hate that you just found a loophole in my logic.
Sir,
by the way,
but we only have a minute here, so before we get too far, Russ, okay. 35 and 24.
Off the table immediately for now. Give them some high number until they prove themselves. Once they prove themselves, they say it's been 5 years since Miggy, cool.
Okay. I agree. I think, for me, 24 is already retired. It's just Miggy wears it until he doesn't want to play anymore, and then you look at everybody. It's kind of like we said in the text. It's like Konstantinov's number. Is it retired? No. But is it retired? Yeah.
Functionally.
It's retired. No kid, I don't care if it's 30 years from now. If you read the story, you know, John Smith came in and requested 16. You look at him and go, sucks to suck. That number's not available. You're wearing 43 because I don't
care.
Here's
61. Yeah, I hope you're dyslexic. Yeah.
Here's zero. Enjoy it. Love it. 16 is a retired number in this city. It's that for me. Verlander's number is something different. Verlander, you need like you said, a couple of years. Let the memory fade. Let him, everybody remember him more for the fact that he cheated to win a World Series, and then we'll And then we'll get back to it. But 24 is a retired number because it's just for what he did, no one can live up to, and therefore that number is something different. It's like saying that 19 should still be available. No one did what Stevie did, and no one's ever going to be able to do what Stevie did. those are numbers that are untouchable. Datsyuk, Zetterberg, and even Sergei, they're going to be there eventually. Just for some odd reason, we got to wait for the bad taste to come out of everybody's mouth when it comes to Sergei deciding to leave us for... he left for Anaheim, right? Or did he leave for Washington?
It was Washington eventually, but...
I'm assuming...
Was it the Rangers that he went to? Oh, it was the Rangers.
Not immediately.
I thought he left us for Anaheim.
Yeah, but, it might have been directly Anaheim. Then he played for Columbus, he played for Washington, he bounced around a lot.
Yeah, I'm not the hockey guy. You guys are supposed to know more than me on this. Look, we ran out of time. One of these days we're going to get plays of the weekend. I swear, one of these days it's going to happen. It's just not happening this week for some reason. That's on me. Late start today, but we got through it. Turned out to be a good one. I got to thank these two again, the birthday boys. As I said at the beginning, Justin, you'll be joining us in that age of 31 here very soon. Russ, 31 for the moment. And don't worry, I'm still older than both of you, and it still sucks. My thanks to Russ Ivanak, the Statman.
Oh, it's been a blast. Glad to be getting a year older with you guys.
There you go. Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus, we don't always agree on everything, but one thing we do agree on, we like doing this show together at least for one more week.
Hey, every week, my friend. We get to grow old with each other, and I'm just glad that my age is getting closer to my mentality. So we're getting there, gang.
Senile?
Yes.
Or crotchety. Crotchety, old, look, mad. We're getting there.
We can all say we're a lot crotchetier and a lot older than we were 3 years ago when we started this thing. Can't believe it's getting that close to it. But for right now, as always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.